The God who gave us life gave us liberty. The problem is there are people in power these days who really don't like that. Come, travel the road to freedom with your host, Eleanor White. Welcome to show number 8, recorded on July 21st, 2005. Road to Freedom is a listener-sponsored show by and about all the targets of electronically assisted vigilante gang stalking throughout the world. Road to Freedom brings you the latest information on this crime wave, which has so far been denied by every government and private agency whose mission is to help those who are targets of crime. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and may not be those of others who are targets of vigilante stalking and electronic harassment or of any person or group who may replay these recorded programs. Information for anyone who is thinking about donating to keep Road to Freedom on the air is found on the cover page of this show's website at the bottom. This show's website is shoestringradio.net. That's all one word, shoestringradio.net. Vigilante stalking and the covert use of advanced electronic weapons on vigilante stalking targets is basically the use of lies. Again, lies, to motivate networked groups of citizens to destroy the lives of their innocent targets. These programs are about the ongoing efforts to expose this activity and hopefully to stop it. Today we'll be talking with Mr. Alan Watt, a longtime researcher of history, religion, politics, and crime, and in particular, the involvement of secret societies in these arenas. Of particular interest to the anti-vigilante stalking and electronic harassment movement are crimes either initiated by or sanctioned by government. Government has been keeping a tight lid on vigilante stalking and electronic harassment and has a history, as explained in earlier shows, of actually committing similar crimes in the name of national security. Alan Watt and other researchers have repeatedly found that membership in secret societies is a prerequisite for positions of authority in all levels of government. The problem is that secret societies have huge portions of their membership who have no idea that, say, 10% of their members are actively, but covertly, committing grievous crimes. In fact, several targets of vigilante stalking and electronic harassment have reported that known secret society members, usually of the Order of Free and Accepted Masons, have participated in their harassment. So it's not all senior members. Some selected junior members are apparently participants as well. Alan Watt has more to tell along these lines. Alan has written 3 books on his research, and I will let Alan tell the listeners himself how the books can be ordered. The reason I asked Alan to come on is that he has also experienced the type of attacks characteristic of vigilante stalking and electronic harassment. Welcome to Road to Freedom, Alan.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on.
And could you tell us how the listeners could order your books? They're not available in bookstores.
No. Yeah, they can write to me. They're $25 each. That includes both packing. And the contents, I say, even the contents aren't your regular off-the-shelf information. I go deep into the research from the ancient times right through to the present times and document it with the very little exempt information, which is available when you research it. And if you want to, one or all of these books, then $25 and a postal order will do from the post office to Alan Watt, which is A-L-A-N, Watt is W-A-T-T. And my address is Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is like Fred Estaire, only with an E, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario. The postal code is T for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. But as I say, the information contained within goes as far back as Sumer and philosophers of Greece, because they did more talking about this secret society that was already in existence in their day than probably anyone since. So it's very real. It's all about control of the world. And I delve into their information, and then I bring up current authors who also have been working in government or the CIA or MI6 in Britain, who've also written books about this very technique of electronic harassment, which is very real. It's documented, and it's being used on the public on a much wider scale today. In the 1960s, they were testing it out on individuals more so than today. And targeting them, and they even had a chip implant put into many guys who were in the military in Britain, who suddenly believed that they were being controlled by some computer. And this was a new phenomenon they saw coming into the psychiatric hospitals in the 1960s, before the computer was a household word. And it turns out, many, many years later, the government admitted that they did use selective soldiers who went in for minor operations whilst in the military, and they put in various implants to see what effect they had.
Alan, excuse me one second. Before we get too far into the topic, you've given the listeners enough to become interested in your books.
Yeah.
And I just want to repeat your address myself so they hear it from two different voices. As your telephone connection tends to be a little bit weak.
Uh-huh.
So the address for these books, they're $25 each. A postal money order is fine, but if you send it from outside of Canada, you want to be sure that whatever you send is in Canadian dollars. My understanding is you can send an American postal money order, but you must tell the clerk that you want it in Canadian dollars.
International.
And the address is Alan Watt, and that's A-L-A-N-W-A-T-T. Next line is Site, that's S-I-T-E 41, then Box 4. And the city name is Estaire, E-S-T-A-I-R-E. Ontario, country is Canada, and the postal code is P3E space 4N1, and in phonetics that's Papa 3 Echo, then a space, 4 November 1. Okay, now what Alan has said to this point is that he's written about the people behind the power structure throughout history. And what he has discovered is that, distant as it may sound, he's discovered that the secret society people who are lusting for power are not only aware of electronic harassment, but are almost certainly behind it as well. And in private, they're very brutal. They don't pull any punches. They will do anything they have to achieve their dream, which is world domination with their particular members at the top. So would you continue, Alan? You were talking about electronic harassment and these people who lust for power.
Yeah, well, we can go as far back even as to Plato, the Greek philosopher, who he wrote about a future society, which would be the perfect, he called it republics, or world state. And he said, even said there'd be a guardian class that would run it from the top. They would have a helping class of bureaucrats and military and so on. And he said, the time will come where women will also serve in the front lines with the men. And that will be the time for their final takeover, which is happening today.
It certainly is.
And he also said, he said, the perfect world that we shall construct will be based on the special breeding of selected people for special purposes. So we're into eugenics here. He said, outside of the guardian class, those who are in the military and who have military mindsets will be interbred with the women in the military. So their offspring will consummate the hereditary military. And then he said, we shall breed short, squat men, he said, for going into mines. Tall men, he said, if these people could pick apples, for instance. And he said, in other words, just like the animals that are the domesticated animals, which are inbred for specific qualities, we shall do the same with the he called them the ids. He didn't say the lower classes. He called them the ids. They were not human as far as he was concerned.
Indeed, and let me say that establishing total control is the only way these things can be done, and that's what leads us to this overwhelming harassment night and day, both by human beings and by electronic equipment that is so advanced the university professors don't know about it.
Yes, and that's the key to it in this system in which we live. I've talked to many high Masons, way above the 33rd degree level, and independently they've all told me the same things. And one of those things was that they love the number 3. The number 3 is the Trinity. They always have a Trinity regardless of the religion they create or push. And they have 3 levels of every science. And from professorship down, I was told, that is the lowest level of any science.
Well, we who are targets of this stuff can assure the listeners, those listeners who have not experienced it, that what Alan just said is the absolute truth. What we have experienced is basically the most bizarre happenings which you read about as paranormal, for example, happen to us. We do not have a clue how it's done, and obviously someone does because it's being done. And it is not poltergeist because the timing is different. We're being observed all the time, and the timing is such as if you're doing something messy or something precise, you will have your body and limbs shoved around so you can't do it. That is not characteristic of a poltergeist attack. You will find that this happens when you go to work as well, or when you're in your car. So what we're saying is our experience backs up Alan's assertion 100% that there are at least 2 levels of science beyond what the best university physics professor knows about.
That's right. It's all compartmentalized. And now, some of the equipment that they do use and have used since the 1950s was shown on a CBC television program, the Wendy Mesler Show, and when she had Nick Begich on from Alaska. And Nick Begich, of course, was the son of a congressman who was killed in a plane crash. And he went on his own investigation and then came into this world of harp technologies and various control, mind control devices. And on the Wendy Mesler Show, he had a huge table full of these little handheld TV converter type remotes. Some no larger than a pack of cigarettes, some smaller. And he told Wendy to stand over, maybe 20 feet away from him. And he pointed one at her, and he said, "What do you hear?" And she said, I hear music right in the center of my head." And this is a live television program.
Alan, this is brand new to me, and I'm stunned by it. I didn't know that Nick had equipment that could do that, so we're definitely going to have to get in touch with him and find out what that was.
Yes, well, I recorded the show, and he said, if I wanted to, I could just as easily have put words in your head. And he said, this equipment is obsolete. He said, the CIA were using this in the 1950s. So you can imagine what they have today.
Yes, we don't have to imagine, do we? You and I and the rest of us. Can you tell us what some of your experiences that jolted you into the reality of this stuff, that it's not just written in some book somewhere, that it's for real and you've experienced it?
Yes. I've also known people who were implanted with chips in Britain who had them removed. And they had been involved in the military and all had minor operations within the military and then had terrible upsets afterwards after they were discharged. One was actually committed to a mental institution. And he said that he felt there was something in his spine that was controlling him. And they did x-rays and they did find this tiny little, they didn't know what it was at the time. But they removed it, and it all stopped. So they were testing them out mainly on military people back in the 1970s and 60s, actually.
That's quite a while ago. Our own membership, who are most of us are not military. I am military, but I don't. I've never found any evidence of an implant. But a few of us, less than a handful, have had implants. The common experience with us is that those of us who have had them taken out, the doctor loses them or won't give them to us, saying something like, well, this doesn't belong to you, so I'm not going to give it to you.
And I guess it's just probably the Department of Defense that owns it.
Well, ultimately, as most people, most savvy people anyway, know these days, government tends to do things through front entities like universities and businesses.
Yes, they do. But I also noticed that when I was, I've been on the radio for, I think it was 98, and I noticed the harassment techniques. What happens if they can't directly control you or get into your body? They'll try and get somebody near you or next to you to cause upsets all the time, always at a time, a critical time. But when you're writing something or about to go on a show, there'll be some tremendous flare-up. And that's what they do. They can control a person. If you're strong or whatever, or they have a hard time controlling you, they'll get to a person near you to do it. It could even be a neighbor.
Amen. Amen.
And
let me comment, listeners. By the way, Alan has been broadcasting on radio station WWCR out of Tennessee, a 100,000-watt shortwave station which reaches all over the world for some years now. He appears quite often on the Sweet Liberty program hosted by Jackie Petru. So if anyone goes to the site and looks up the Patriot Broadcasters, they can find Jackie's show and can tune in and hear Alan fairly often.
And I think she has the archives as well, the shows.
Mm-hmm.
But we bring a lot of this kind of information. And I also noticed about 3 years ago, when I was getting a lot of response from the writings I was sending out, that whenever I was driving on country roads, I noticed that all the oncoming vehicles would swerve over to my side one after another and then swerve right back again. And I thought, what's happening here to these people? And this happened for a matter of weeks. And I have nothing else to conclude, but something was making them swerve over.
Well, I don't know if you've read Terrorist Stalking in America by David Lawson. He's a private investigator in Florida, and his book describes, he actually infiltrated and rode with some of these gangs, and they do travel around in convoys, so you were probably facing a convoy of these stalking gang members.
One night I was walking my dog. Now, I live in the country down near Mansfield, which is north of Toronto, and I've a dirt road, very little traffic on it ever, and I was walking the dog one night up the hill, and a black SUV drove up, very slow, with its lights off, and I stood there, of course, wondering why this thing was conscious of me. I was standing in the middle of the road. It was very dark, and I shone my flashlight at it, and of course they had the black tinted windows, and it just stood there stationary halfway up the hill. I'm looking at it for about 10 minutes, and it reversed all the way back to half a mile back up to the road it came off. And the next morning when I got up, it's a black SUV sitting just outside my house. And when I opened the door to go up to see who was there, they drove off again. So these are harassment techniques which are used to frighten you off from what you're doing, basically.
Yes, indeed. I can only remember the time that I had a guy in a black Cadillac dressed like a mafia don pull up in front of me and stare at me for a full hour as I did my first picketing excursion in Hamilton, Ontario here. And it didn't stop me, but he caught up with me at a stoplight and pulled up very close, almost hit me, rolled down his passenger window and looked at me with a big toothy grin and applauded. And I swear this fellow was recruited because he looked exactly like the mafia don Carlo Gambino.
Oh, yeah.
He had a gray fedora with a black band. It was a classic. And it didn't stop me, and nothing happened after that. But they do these things. This is par for the course.
The worst it got was probably 4 years ago. It was the winter time. I had been doing a lot of the shows, get a tremendous response, and I was beginning to bring in the Canadian listeners. And just before I went on a show, a helicopter came overhead, very low, so low that the house shook. And I had the wood fire going. And the next thing I knew was that I heard this whoomp. And the doors blew open in the fire, and then my chimney was on fire. So I ran outside, and I looked up, and there, right above the chimney, was this black military-type helicopter. And then it simply took off. I was prepared for this kind of thing to happen. And I ran up with a hose, and I started to put out the fire. Now, there was a white residue around the top of the chimney, very white, and I put out the fire, took a while to do it, and then when I cleaned it out, it was still damp, of course, this residue at the bottom, and when it dried out, it burst into flames again, so I believe there was magnesium there, very bright, brilliant light.
Or phosphorus.
Oh, and phosphorus, yeah.
Yeah.
So they'll do this kind of thing if you're getting out to people and telling them, which are obvious truths, that they don't want to be known by the public.
Absolutely, and as I say, I have three recording adapters which are defunct. They were bought brand new within the last month. Every one of them I tested when I got it home, and I immediately put it in my shoulder bag and carried it there. They have never left my side, and yet they have been remotely disabled.
Yes.
And so they do not like publicity.
Oh, no. Nope. they don't mind if you're simply into the political game and blaming this politician or that politician. But when you're getting closer to the truth that there's a hidden hand behind all of this, then that you start to come under fire, for sure.
Amen. In fact, why don't you tell the listeners about what happened when you tried to get the first copies of your third book published, Alan, long ago?
Yeah, what had happened was I had many, many copies of the first two made up in different photocopy shops down Barry Way, and I never had any problem at all. And I had a couple of sets made up in one of the Staples. There's two Staples up in Sudbury.
Now, for listeners outside of Canada, I don't know if Staples exist, but Staples is a large office equipment, office supplies, and office services supplier here in Canada.
Yep. And so I had trouble getting one copy especially reproduced. They always fouled it up. So this time I thought I need all three done with this new one as well. So I took the first, second, and third master copies to Staples. I waited till most of the rush was over for the day, so I went in about 5 o'clock, at 5 in the afternoon, and the girl looked at them and said, oh, that'll be no problem. Probably in half an hour, I'll have 10 sets of each made up. So I went for a walk for half an hour, and came back, and I saw pandemonium raining all over this big part of the store, and there were three girls in there working. One of them was assistant manageress, who was going through my master copies, pulling out pages that she thought the typing was too close to an edge or something, and redoing them, but not putting them back in the file. And so I saw this mess all over the place. Then I looked at the back bench, the workbench, which is almost 25, maybe 30 feet long, and it's wide. And they had all different pages of my stuff, copies they'd made across the entire bench. And there was parts of my master copies on the front bench where the customers came in, and some of the customers were reading them. And it was a sort of, it was round at the front desk, so where I was standing, there were some parts of the copies there too. And I said, well, what's going on here? And after the manageress explained what she was doing, she says, well, there's some trouble with the machines. So they had two big photocopy machines, multiple copiers going there. And she says, I don't understand it. It worked perfectly all month and all week and all day. But each time with your copies on, the jamming. And so they put onto the other machine and it started to do the same. And so I was there for 4 hours as they went through this. And they turned off so many pages and then put them on the back bench, scattered around, and then go back again and pull out the ones that were jammed and ripped and try to do them. And it was such a weird thing to watch happening, because the three different women were working there independently on my stuff, not communicating with each other. And at one point, when it was quiet, I said, well, what's happening? I said, I've been here for 4 hours, what's happening? And the girl who was reading my stuff turned to me like a robot and with a very pleasant face said, well, nothing at the moment. Says, I said, well, shouldn't there be something happening? I said, you're all standing reading my material. The machines are stopped. She said, well, we're not allowed to read the customer's material. I've watched them doing this for the last hour or so.
Right.
So they seemed to be oblivious of what they were doing. Their answers were out of context with the mess that was all around. And even the manager came across. He was a man, and he said, "Oh, it must be the humidity that's jamming it." I said, "Well, how come five customers in between mine have used the same machines and they've worked perfectly fine. And he looked, and he had a strange look at his face, and he said, he just repeated what he said, well, it must be the humidity. But no, I'd watched these other customers get their stuff put through in between trying to do mine, and there was no hitch at all with them.
Absolutely. Let me back you up, Alan. Alan is not unique in this. I just spent 3 days in a coffee shop here in Hamilton trying to get an 8.5x11 version of the Vigilante Stocking Shoulder Patch, which is on the cover page of shoestringradio.net. And it was a simple single transfer, iron-on transfer to a T-shirt. And it's taken 3 days. Every time I've gone in there, the gal who runs the shop is on the telephone with technical support for her color copier, because she says every time she puts my job on it, the copier screws up. And she finally got me one. I brought it home. I followed the instructions exactly, and it shredded to pieces. So she made another copy on another brand of transfer, and the same thing happened again. So after 3 days and about half a dozen visits and several hours on her part to do one single copy, I don't have a transfer.
Yeah.
And this happens all the time. And just last night, Jackie couldn't print out a report that she wanted for her show. These perpetrators are somehow able to disable anything electronic at a distance and do it surgically, and they can flip the failure off and on like a light switch. So if another customer comes in, it'll work fine. And this is not fiction. This is not sensational. Although Alan is an author selling books, that's not why we're here. We're passing on to you, listeners, the state of technology as it actually is, as opposed to what you've been told when you were in school and through the popular media.
Yeah, and I found too, well, at the very end, after 4 hours, 4 hours and 50 minutes, I said, well, try and find what you've got left of a master copy, if any. I said, throw them in a box and I'll just take them home. And so they did that. I still had to look around the front desk and there would be flying everywhere. And occasional page here, occasional page there, and do most of it myself. And then I said, I don't want everybody reading my material. I said, you've got hundreds and hundreds of pages all over the shop here. And the girl said, oh, we won't read them. She says, they have to be shredded. So what was interesting, when they were reading them, they weren't reading them all together. They were standing in different parts of the store with different pages, reading them silently. And I wondered what was reading them through their eyes, but that's the impression I got at the time.
That's more than an impression, Alan. Our group does have occasional instances where some sort of harassment is planned based on what could only have been seen through our eyes.
Yeah.
Briefly, I ordered 16 topographic maps of New England, where I lived originally, and I got every single map ID number correct on the order. The order came in with three mistakes, three maps that were picked incorrectly. However, there was something special about the ones that were substituted. Every single one of those was a map that I had focused my eyes on and then said, no, I'm not going to order that one. And this is the type of stunt they pull. They actually want us to know that they have these capabilities, but they choose to do things in such a way that you can't prove it to anyone, so that if you tell anyone about it, you're considered mentally ill.
Yeah, and of course, you've got information to impart, so any information you have is discredited as well if you tell them what's happening to you.
Absolutely. However, Alan, you know, we're in the 21st century, and more people are reporting being targeted, lots of them, 1 in 100, for example, is a fairly good estimate based on some surveys we did. And we think it's just time to get the information in front of the public anyway, regardless of whether they like it or not, whether they believe it or not, because it's the truth.
It's the truth, but the thing is, you see, it is documentable. A lot of the people involved in this, I find that the ones who control the system, and it's a system, that's the whole thing. I call it the system because it's their system in which we live. We're trained to go into the workforce in their system and basically work for them through our taxes and so on. And they upgrade their system every so often. And, of course, right now we're in the middle of a very big upgrade into the next stage, which is going to be a vastly different world than the one we've known. But Bertrand Russell, he was a British lord. He wrote one book, many books actually, but one book in particular on this very topic. And he had experimented back in the beginning of the 1900s with chartered schools from the British royalty. They'd given them charters to experiment with in schools on children, on behavior modifications. And in that time, he was finding ways of giving pre-pubertal children, getting them interested in sex, to see what effect it would have on them after puberty, to see if it would actually create a generation of sex-addicted teenagers. That was his mission.
Well, he succeeded, hasn't he? Kids are so young these days.
Called Education and the Good Life. It's worth getting a hold of for anyone wanting to know that, yeah, they have been involved in experiments on the mind. But later on, he wrote a book called The Impact of Science on Society. And it might be available in your library. An excellent read, because in it, he goes on, he says in his book, that a technique will shortly be used on the general public of the world based on electronics, is that where mind control can actually be induced upon every individual. He said the easiest thing to induce is emotional changes. He said, but we can go much, much further. He says, and the people concerned, the subjects, will have no idea that they have mind or thought intrusion being electronically used on them. And now that's in his book, and he was a high spokesman for the group that run this world.
Oh, I can back him up, because while it doesn't happen really often, we do go through instances, we meaning our group of vigilante stalking and electronic harassment targets, we do go through instances where we do something out of character.
Yeah.
And we cannot tell that this thought and control pattern is being imposed on us. There's no sensation.
Yeah.
But you certainly do know it once it's finished.
Yeah.
And you do strange things. Like, I went to the office in the middle of the night once, and I was sure I had to get there right then to do something. When I got there, I realized the stunt was over, and I had no reason to be there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this what Alan's talking about is going on. We can testify to that.
And it's an even more documented, or better documented, later book put out by Zbigniew Brzezinski. And he, I think, was the Secretary of State. And he was also the head of the Department for War under Reagan and different presidents. And at the present time, he's an advisor to George Bush. He's been on television recently, in fact, in Canada, talking about the new world that is coming, along with Kissinger, Henry Kissinger. Now, both of them, Brzezinski and Kissinger, are members of the Bilderberger Group. That's a very high world decision-making group that has annual meetings very well guarded wherever they go. The Queen goes, the bankers of the world go, the banking families go, and certain elected politicians go, you always know who's going to be president because the person will be asked to go before he runs for presidency. That's where they choose them.
And guess who went to a recent meeting? Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's right. Not only did he do that, but Lord Rothschild in Britain had a helicopter fly him to Rothschild's castle when it was there.
Now, and of course, listeners, we know from research done that Arnold Schwarzenegger's past is such that he's kind of in favor of the same type of things Adolf Hitler was.
Oh, he's into eugenics. That's what bodybuilding is. It's changing you from what you are into something which they claim is more perfect. And that's basically where it's all going.
Mm-hmm.
Brzezinski wrote a book called, it was Between Two Ages. It's about this very time. He wrote it back in the 1970s. And there's a section in there called the Technotronic Era. Now remember that he is still an advisor to the present president. And in this book, Between Two Ages, the Technotronic Era, go through the same scenario that Bertrand Russell had written many years before him. And the Technotronic Era, he said, through the various technological advances we have, which are unknown by the general public, he said, we are now in a position to control the minds of every single individual on the planet. Yeah, and he says, without their knowledge or them even being aware of it. And he brought in some of the HARP technologies, such as the station in Alaska, the electromagnetic pulsation that they use, plus the much smaller mobile versions which they do have. And he said that there were various means to improve the capability of HARP technology to control the mind, and he said that if the air were to be full of metallic-type particles, that would basically make the atmosphere far more conductive, and we could spread the pulsations out in a far, far greater area. Now, this spraying that's going on, and has been for the last few years, all over the world, except for China and Switzerland, which were the only two countries not to sign the Open Skies Treaty, you'll find that the spraying aluminum oxide, barium, and there's also traces of copper found now. So these are all metallic substances, and it is definitely making the atmosphere more conducive to this pulsating HARP-type technology, which is being used consistently. You can pick up those stations on the shortwave radio, and they're going 24 hours a day now in two different areas, and the sound is unmistakable. It's like nothing else you'll hear on shortwave.
Is that the motorboat sound that we're hearing right now, Alan?
What you're hearing now is usually an even different frequency from the original one used at Riga, and the Russian Soviets were using it. This one now sounds more like a wow, 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 wow sound, constant, and it's loud, and very evenly spaced, and you'll find it just before 12160 in the morning. It's just before there, on that band, and then in the afternoon and during the night, you'll find it before 5000. You can come across it. So it's going 24 hours a day now, and that's just the one in Alaska. And of course they have coupled this technology with Tesla technology. Nikola Tesla apparently was the guy who first came out with it. They've coupled it with the satellites, so they can boost this capability of theirs and target any area, or finally pinpoint any individual they want to on the planet.
Do you have any books that are authoritative and referenced that say that?
They had articles written about the HAARP project in some of the Canadian newspapers quite a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the problem with the literature is that it's so diluted. I mean, to find one reference to the effect on somebody's mind out of all the HAARP literature is...
Yeah. Well, you'll find it in Brzezinski's book, though.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, in Between Two Ages. Yeah.
Between Two Ages, I see.
Yeah, because he goes into that in the chapter called The Technotronic Era. He goes into these... He touches on them. He doesn't go into it in very fine detail, but he does touch on the basic techniques, the electronic techniques that they have already used.
And his highest rank in the U.S. federal cabinet was what?
I think he was Secretary of State for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was the in charge of the War Department. I don't know what they call it there.
Defense, yeah.
Yeah. So, and now he's still an advisor to George Bush. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the American version of the Royal Institute of International Affairs. That's the American branch, in fact.
Right.
And, of course, that was set up back in the late 1800s by Cecil Rhodes, who created Rhodesia, and Rothschild. And they ended up acquiring all of the gold and diamond mines across South Africa to build up their wealth to do what they claim was to eventually control the world through finances and to bring in a certain type of culture worldwide based on the British system. So now that they have the Canada has a group here, Lloyd Axworthy, in fact, is one of the highest ranking members for the Canadian side, and they call it the Canadian Institute for International Affairs. All Commonwealth countries have it. They call it the International Affairs, and they simply use Australian, Canadian, and so on for the first word, you know.
Yes, Canada is kind of disappointing, aren't they, Alan? They seem to be keeping very quiet on all of these important issues.
Oh, that's tremendously. We're supposed to be happy and just drink our six-packs here and have a good time.
Watch hockey.
Yeah, watch hockey. Listen to the crisis, ongoing crisis, financial and otherwise, and leave it to the experts. That's the bottom line. Bertrand Russell, on the impact of science on society, said, and he wrote that back in the 1940s, and he said the world will be trained to only take documentation or news from experts, he says, until they're unable to think for themselves. And that's the stage that we've got to. And then again, Brzezinski reiterates that in his book, Between Two Ages, and he says, shortly the time is coming when the general public will be unable to think for themselves. They will be downloaded by information on the previous night's news, and that will be their topic at work the following day.
Well, that's happening right now, for sure. Just try and tell them about this subject. Their eyes glass over and they look out the window.
Yes. You need a Peter Mansbridge-type figure or a Dan Rather to tell them something. Then they will believe it. But if anyone else tells them, they won't, because they've been trained to listen and only believe these authority or authoritative figures.
Well, Canada did one tiny little thing that was really good, but they aborted it. And you put me onto this originally. For a couple of years, not recently, but a couple of years ago, the Canadian government apparently was sending out letters to Canadian citizens who asked about the chemtrails.
Yeah.
And they said in the letter that it wasn't being done by Canadian aircraft.
That's right.
Which is an admission that it's going on.
Yes.
Nowadays, they won't talk about it. They just say, we don't know what you're talking about.
Well, a few years ago, aircraft were coming over before the trail started to over the whole of Canada. There were aircraft coming across from the States, and they were spraying low over the town of Espanola, which is near Manitoulin.
In Ontario, yes.
Ontario. and displayed it heavily for months, the people there noticed that they were having a lot of miscarriages. Even the animals and the deer and so on were having miscarriages. And it got so bad that the people, the residents, drew up a committee, and they did take it all the way to the Supreme Court, and they did get an admission that the U.S. aircraft had been testing something out on them, and that's where it ended, with an admission that this happened from the Supreme Court of Canada.
Yes, and believe it or not, I heard on one late night show a tape that a caller made from an air traffic controller in, I think it was Victoria, British Columbia, where the controller actually stated on the telephone that these were combined military exercises. So it has leaked out, but now it's considered so secret that they won't even admit that they ever talked about it.
Well, they can't, you see. Now, generally what they'll do is tell people, declassify it about 50 years after the event.
Yes.
Because most of the people concerned by then have died.
Right.
Or generally from the spraying. But the Calgary in 1948 was sprayed heavily for a full week by flying fortresses by the permission of the Canadian government in collusion with the U.S. government.
Aren't they generous?
And that is documented, and Don Scott from Sudbury has that information, and he has put that in a book form, and he documents the who gave permission, and it was all signed by the Prime Minister and so on, and so the whole city was used for it. And then, of course, the health authorities followed each individual, unknowingly to the individual, throughout their lives to see what effects it had on them and that came down with cancers and so on.
Indeed. So you can see, listener, you can begin to get the picture that our group, we are not just a few cranks talking about feuds with neighbors. This is a worldwide, centuries-old political agenda that technology is now enabling to come to fruition. And people like Alan are doing heroic work unscrambling all the subterfuge and cover-ups that have gone on. Okay, well, Alan, I'm going to thank you for coming on and sharing just a small preview of your work, which extends back for years. And I hope that we can have you on as developments begin to become better known, and to give us some color commentary on them.
Sure, that'd be a pleasure.
Well, thank you very much, Alan, and we certainly wish you all the best in your endeavors, and we hope that for years to come you'll be keeping us posted on the inside story.
I definitely will.
Now, for more information, listeners, on vigilante gang stalking and electronic harassment, please see the links on this show's website, which is shoestringradio.net. Well, folks, that's it for today. I invite you to join us again next time as we travel the road to freedom. And remember, freedom isn't free.